Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2012. Lecture 13, delivered on October 3, 2012. The title of this lecture is Time Value of Money.
Today, time value of money.
Now, let me go here. You, woman, I want to borrow $100 from a year. You give me $100, I'll give you back $100 in a year. Is that okay? What? Wait, what? Why not? Wait a minute. You're Jewish like me? That's cool. You're going to charge me interest? Why? Oh, so it's inflation that's going to be the issue, right? No. Actually, that's really only a part of it. You see, when you lend me money, you are renting me something. It's rent. And there's got to be a rental rate on it. Because that $100, if you kept that, you could buy noms with that. You know what noms are, right? You know, nom nom food, nom noms. Okay, you buy noms. You could buy a shirt that actually didn't clash with the rest of the universe. sorry. But you understand, the point there is that you are foregoing consumption in order to give me that money and have me use it for a year, and I will use it like a boss, I promise you. You know, Denny's, maybe a girlfriend, you know, the whole nine yards. But you don't get to have it. So you are going to charge me for, there will be that erosion. You're absolutely right about that, the erosion of purchasing power through inflation. But that is only a secondary issue to the fact that you don't get to have the money. You got a place you live in right now? Okay. I'd like you to move out. I'm going to live in there. Wait, what kind of... No, you see, there again. You see, if I have it, you don't have it. So in order for me to have it, you would have to charge me for what you give up. That is business. And it's not even just business. It's just pure logic that you are going to seek a reward for foregone consumption over if I take your money from you for a while. And that is the basis of what we call interest rates, is this idea that at the base of any concept of interest rates is an opportunity cost of foregone consumption. If someone lends me money, that someone doesn't get to use that money himself or herself. That's what drives all interest rates, is this basic underlying substrate of opportunity cost. So I can say right off the bat that an interest rate is an opportunity cost of foregone consumption. So let's say that you are going to be nice to me. You're going to charge me 10% interest on that $100. So in other words, the future value in 1 year of that $100 would be the $100, the present value of it, times 1 plus 0.10. The interest rate. So I can work that out, and that comes out to be $110. So I would have to pay you back $110 in 1 year. Now, more generally, then I can say Future value, FV, after for 1 year, would be the present value times 1 plus the interest rate that I was charging. And for God's sake, if I write it in R, someone stop me. We used to write R's, now they use K's. Now, if it were for more than 1 year, I could even go further and say, all right, I would raise that to the nth power for n years, because it would be 1 times 1 plus k times 1 plus k for however many years I was going here. So the k would be the annual interest rate, and we're going to fix this formula up here. The number of annuals, years, and this would be the present value. That's the first of our formulas. Not complicated at all. Okay, so let's say that I borrowed that $100 for 5 years. I would say, all right, the future value of it would be the $100 times 1 plus 0.10 to the fifth power. Nothing hard about that. You honk that out on your calculator, and you get, yeah, I should be able to do that in my head. Like, yeah, hat 5 times 100. So it'd be $161.05. Now, there's something about this, and I'll bring it up early, and I'll come back to this little point over and over again. When you do the formulas that I'm going to show you today in the class, always just do a reality check on yourself, because if you've done something wrong in the formula, usually your number looks stupidly wrong. Just do a quick reality check. Does this answer look right? Yeah, it's in the right ballpark. If I'd gotten an answer in the millions or in the pennies, I know I had done the formula wrong. Always step back once you've got your answer and say, does this answer make sense? And in this case, that's about right, $161. So in 5 years, I'm going to give you back $161.05. So there's your damn money back. But there's another side to this too, you see, because I've got this formula, future value, which is the present value times 1 plus the discount rate, and you're going to hear me use a lot of different words for the same thing here, to the nth power. Well, you know, suppose that I wanted to do it backwards, which is more what we're interested in corporate finance. I might get money in the future. What is that worth to me now? That's where we get into the question of present value. I will give you $1,000 in 20 years. Or I could give you some money now. How much would I have to give you now so that you would be indifferent to the $1,000 in 20 years or the money now? That is what we call a present value. The huge part of corporate finance, analyzing projects, is that you're going to plunk money down now, spend money, and then you're going to get a stream of money coming in revenue or in net income or free cash flow, however you want to talk about it, over a period of time later. What we want to do is telescope that money back. Yeah, I'm going to get money in the future, but I want to know what that money's worth now to me and compare that to the now money I'm spending. That means we have to flip the formula around so we have a formula to find out the present value of a future amount of money. And that's when we get to the second formula, where I divide both sides by the 1 plus k to the n, so I can say that the future value over 1 plus k to the nth power is a present value. Another way I can write this, and if you remember this from your dark days in algebra, you'll see me oftentimes write this as 1 plus k to the negative nth power. you can use a negative exponent. That's the same as the denominator on the positive with the positive exponent. And it makes it a little bit faster to do these problems sometimes using the negative exponent on your calculator. But they're the same thing. You can divide by 1 plus k to the nth, or you can just multiply by 1 plus k to the negative nth power. Either way, you get the same answer. And oftentimes, you'll see me doing the quicker way with the negative power and writing it that way. So now we can say, all right, well, that $1,000 in 20 years, what would you take now? But in order to know that, I'd have to have a discount rate. In other words, that was why I was showing you that capital asset pricing model, is so that we have a method for determining an interest rate that we can use in present values. But let's say for this, for our purposes, that the risk of that cash flow is commensurate with, let's say, 12% per year. So I could say that the present value is going to be the $1,000 times 1 plus 0.12 to the negative, what did I say, 20 years? 20th power. To the negative 20th power. And so if I would encourage you to make sure you can do these. And also turn on the calculator. 1,000 times 1.12 to the negative 20th power. Really? $103.67. Here's the deal. What that says is that you could invest $103.67 at 12% for 20 years, and you'd have $1,000. So you would take $1,000 in 20 years, or $103.67, and they'd be the same to you. This is the basis of what I was talking about before. We can look at future expected cash inflows coming from a project, and we can turn those into now money so that we can compare apples to apples. I'm spending money now, and I can look at what the now equivalent of money coming in the future is. Otherwise, I'm comparing now money to future money, and they're different units. But this way, I can actually bring the money out there back to the present. This shows up in a lot of different circumstances. I'll show you one here in a few minutes, but essentially, for example, like in lotteries, when you win huge in a lottery, they will offer you 20 payments, annual payments, or they might instead just say you can have a lump sum now. That lump sum would be the equivalent of that stream of money over the next 20 years. And a stream of money is what we call an annuity. I'll get to that in a minute here. Ow, God. Okay, now, let me show you something here. This isn't hard to do. I mean, this is what's called the time value of a lump sum. Lump sum. In other words, we're looking at just a plop of money. Boom. And it just comes, either now we're looking at its future value, or it comes future and we can bring it back to now. And we can sophisticate the formulas to do some fancy stuff. Find out present values of streams of money, those annuities. We can even find out the present value of a stream of money that goes on forever. That's called a perpetuity. And those have a very practical use, those formulas, obviously. But here's what I want to bring up now. And I'm going to tell you a little history on how this happened. What I've been doing here is annual interest rates. Annual interest rates. I've been doing some 12% annual. And every year, the interest is recalculated based upon the principal at the end of that year. So with that five-year deal, at the end of the first year, I'd have $105, or what did you charge me? Was it 10%? Okay, I'd have $110. So then I calculate the interest on $110 for another year. And then at the end of that year, that's the compounding annually. Okay, now I'm going to take you back to a time back in the early part of the century. And I have brought this up before, in the Wild West days of banking and investments, the craziness just didn't stop in the 1920s. Banks were offering insane interest rates to get money into the banks, oftentimes because of they were running Ponzi schemes. They had to bring money in to pay the people they'd promised the moon to before, and the money that they brought in, they'd have to promise even more to. And so you had these ridiculous interest rates being offered on bank accounts, on investments. And, of course, these schemes have all come crashing down one after the other. And this had been going on for decades, this kind of nonsense. And the whole idea the government had always had was laissez-faire. Let markets work themselves out. So if someone's cheating, that person will eventually get burned, and that'll be the end of that person, and people will learn, and they won't do it again. That was the whole theory of regulation. We don't regulate. Markets will fix themselves. Well, that is all well and good until you have just about everyone getting a butt bath on some scam investment. People who thought they were doing the right thing, they tried to do some analysis, and they got their asses beaten on them. And so finally, once the roaring 20s was over, the great crash had happened, the depression was in force, the American voters threw out the rascals in Congress, threw out the idiot in the White House, and they put in a whole new regime of elected officials who saw a very different role for the government. The government is going to regulate these markets. The government is going to punish the hell out of anyone who screws people over or who even tries to. Now, in that regard, there were many prongs to this. There was regulation in the securities industry, regulation in the labor markets, regulation in banking. In banking, we came into the era of what was called the Glass-Steagall Act and other pieces of legislation that said, banks, you will behave. You stop playing these games. No, you can't self-police. Look what you did. And so one of the little pieces of this broad regulation with an iron fist on the banking system was a cap on the interest rate that a bank could charge on a passbook savings account. Banks, you're not allowed to charge the moon. You're not allowed to charge and do competition with each other up into the stratosphere. You will all play by one fundamental rule. You cannot pay or offer on a passbook savings account more than 5.25% interest per year. That's it. No more. Well, of course, you heard the screaming and the crying. Oh, you're ruining the free market. You're a bunch of socialists and all your damn reds and all that. And at the time, we had a president named Franklin Delano Roosevelt who was very diplomatic. He just said, go to hell. And Glass-Steagall went into effect, and it put everyone on notice. You will behave by a set of strict rules. Glass-Steagall was repealed in 1999. The reason being that the banks had paid enough elected officials, and everyone said, oh, banks have all learned their lessons. They can regulate themselves. You know, free markets are better than regulation and all of that. Which, of course, we saw the results of that in the first decade of the 20th century. But that's another story. So here's the problem, though. That 5.25% was actually well more than a competitive rate for banks in that era. Truth be told, and my parents were in the lending, they were managers of a little loan company, and I saw the old books. And honestly, when you were looking at loans and savings accounts. The interest rates you to use for getting numbers for how much people would get, they didn't use calculators, they used these giant books of tables. I really didn't see those things going past like 3%. They do it in 0.1% in increments from 0.1% up to 3.5%. But you never saw it go in these old books from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. You never saw the interest rates even come near 5.25%. So in other words, this was one of those price ceilings that really was not effective because competitive rates were in the 2 to 3% range all through this period. However, it got to a point in later on, and I'd say probably in the 60s, when there were interest rate pressures from alternatives in investment that were above 5.25%. And the banks began to say, we got a problem here. You know, you've got a law that says we can't offer more than 5.25%. And that means that in people who save their money are going places where that rule isn't in effect. Now, it wasn't going much above 5.25%, but the banks were beginning to feel a little pressure saying that price ceiling is now creating a shortage of funds on us. If you remember that from economics, that price ceiling is now causing some of our people who would come in and start open savings accounts to go to places where they can get more than 5.25%. The upshot of this is that banks figured out a trick. It was an old, old trick, but it started becoming very popular. Compounding the interest more than once a year. Instead of calculating that interest on my loan once every year, $110, and then we calculate it for the next year, they started saying, let's stop every 6 months and do it. So we got to an era when we started seeing compoundings happen more than once a year. The first one was semi-annual. And I'll show you how that affects that formula. Remember how we got the $161? Let's say that you said, oh, by the way, I'm going to compound the interest on your butt twice a year. So the future value that I would owe you would be $100 times 1 plus 0.10 over 2. In other words, I'm dividing the interest into 2 periods per year to the 5 times 2. In other words, we're looking at what we call a periodic interest rate and the number of periods. So in other words, a 5-year loan semi-annually would actually be 10 periods. 10% annual would be 5% on each of those periods. Let's see what that does. Let's see what that does when I change the compounding. I do 100 times 1 plus 0.1 divided by 2, close parentheses, to the 10th power, and I get, well, spank me, $162.89. Do you see how that brought up the amount of money in the loan? Or for you, it brought up the amount of money you get back. Well, let's try this quarterly and see what happens. The future value would be 100 times 1 plus 0.10 over 4. That would be the periodic on quarterly compounding to the 5 times 4, 20 periods. 5 years is 20 periods on quarters. And if I do that, I get 100 times, open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.1 divided by 4 to the 20th power, $163.86. Do you see how the amount of money is going up as I increase the number of compoundings per year? That was what the banks did. They said, technically, we're still in compliance with Glass-Steagall at 5.25%, but we're going to compound more than once a year. So the effective rate on the loan, on the passbook savings accounts, is above 5.25%. This was the origin of the whole idea of compoundings more than once a year, because it caused the effective rate on the loan, on the passbook savings accounts, to go above the statutory ceiling. So I can write the formula a little bit differently if you wanted to see it this way. For D is the number of compoundings per year. N is the number of years, and K is the annual interest rate . I can write a future value as the present value times 1 plus K over D to the D times N, to take into account compounding. So semiannual, 2. Quarterly would be a 4 for the D. What about monthly? What would D be for monthly? 12. How about weekly? What do you say? Oh, come on. Do you know how many weeks are in a year? 52. No, actually, I had someone come up to me last semester and, Professor, how many weeks are in a year? And she just looked honest at me. I said, 52. And she said, really? Yeah. Okay, let's try this one. Daily. Actually, you know, the old school, now they say 365. Back in the day, and you will still run into plenty of places where they do it the old way. They would say, if it's daily, you put a 360 there and a 365 there. You say, wait, what? Yeah, that was how. I mean, it's fine if you do 365 down here. But in the old rule, if it were daily, you put the denominator, when you divide the interest rate, you divide it up into 360 parts. And then the exponent, you put 365. You know where the 360 comes from? Anyone know where? 360 used to be a very common number in finance. It was the number of bank days, taking out the 5 big holidays of the year. There was Thanksgiving, Christmas, 4th of July, and Easter. Was Easter one of them? And then Memorial Day, yes. And the other ones were, you know, well, whatever, those don't count. But the real reason it was done was that for centuries, traders didn't have calculators. Some had slide rules. But they had some bizarre trick that they knew how to divide by 360 by some strange rule that made it work. And so 360, they justified it by 360 banking days a year. But it was really because there was some arithmetic rule that you could divide by 360 really fast. And I don't even remember what the rule is anymore. But anyway, I brought up a term just a few minutes ago called effective rate. Effective rate. Now, this is the annual rate that is the same as the compounded rate. So, if I were to look at that 10% semi-annually, the effective rate, here's how I get it. For semi-annual, all I would do is take 1 plus 0.10 over 2 to the second power. For the quarterly rate, I just do 1 plus 0.10 over 4 to the fourth power. Let me honk those two out for you. 1.1,
1 plus 0.1 divided by 2 to the second power is,
oh, and then I have to do minus 1. The minus 1.
Don't forget the minus 1. Is, really?
10.25%. To the fourth power, it would be 1 plus 0.1 divided by 4, all of that to the fourth power. That's 10.38%. You see how the effective rate goes up as your number of compoundings increases? That was the trick that they were doing. They could create a rate that was effectively better than the stated rate. It wasn't monstrously better, but it was still, it gave them the ability to compete more against investments that were offering like 5.5% or 5.35%. So if I were to look at this 5.1% and I look at semi quarter monthly weekly, and I'm going to write these down just so you got them in your little portfolio so that you could go back and check them. For the 5.25%, I'm going to do that. If I were to do 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 2, all of that to the second power, I'd get 5.32%. I pulled myself up 7 basis points above the statutory rate. I'm still in legal compliance, but I've got a rate that's actually a little better. If I went to a quarter, I go 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 4, all of that to the fourth power, I get 5.35%. Monthly, I go 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 12, all of that to the 12th power, I get 5.38%. Weekly, 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 52 to the 52nd power, 5.39%. Well, that sucked. And daily, using 360 and 365, the old attack, 1 plus 0.0525 divided by 360, close the parentheses and raise that to the 365 power, 5.47%. So you could reach almost 5.5% just doing this compounding trick and still stay in technical compliance. And yeah, there is actually a formula if you want to do it instantaneously. You can actually have instantaneous compounding, and I won't hold you to that one. But instantaneous compounding, that's very unusual. You'd have to have a lot of money to have them offer you instantaneous compounding. So most of the time it's just going to go down. You might see hourly or something like that, but it's going to converge on about 5.5%, if I'm not mistaken. Let me try something real quick here. Yeah, instantaneous compounding would be No, that's not right. That can't be right. One way or the other. But that's all I'd hold you to on that. I will, on the exam, ask you for an effective rate. I'll ask it. Just know how to do it. I give you, say, an effective rate on quarterly compounding or something like that. By the way, if I said biweekly, what's biweekly? How much? Which would be what number? 24, right? Or semi-monthly, that would be twice every month. Oh, 26. Yeah, I was just testing your ass, okay? Yeah. But yeah, but semi-monthly, in other words, every 2 months, semi-monthly, no, twice every month would be 24. Okay. Now, what's the practical use here? Like I said, most of the time, we can do present values, we can do future values off this. Let me try this one. You will spend, you can spend $500 today and receive $200 in 2 years along with $200 in 5 years and $300 in 8 years. If you discount the future cash flows at 8%, is this investment worth it? See, obviously the total amount of money is going to be more than $500. You say, well, hell yeah. But that money isn't going to come right away. It's going to happen in lumps over a period of years. So what I've got to do here is I've got to say, all right, I'm going to pump $500 out. Now I've got 1 year, two, three, four, five, six, seven, 8 years. And I want to put the $500 in red here. At year zero, I've got $500 out of my pocket. $500 out of my pocket right here. Okay, so now 2 years out, I'm going to get $200 in the door. 5 years out, I get another $200 in the door. And then 8 years out, I get another $300 in. So what I want to do is I want to telescope each of these back to now so I can compare it to the now $500 out of my pocket. So I'm going to telescope these back, find out their present value equivalents now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the present value of the first one would be $200 times 1 plus 0.08 to the negative second power. Another $200, I'll take at 1 plus 0.08 to the negative fifth power. It's 5 years. And finally, I've got this long cash, 1 plus 0.08 to the negative eighth power. That's 300. I'm just testing you, yeah.
always criticizing, always finding something wrong with what I've done. I've done everything I can. I raised 5 kids for you. I killed a hog last night and fixed it for the whole family. I plowed 1,700 acres today. But no, you have to find fault with $100 out of the budget. And I bought a nice print dress for the Sears catalog. Did you notice it? No. What the hell am I talking about? Shut up.
Okay, where the hell? And I would really ask someone to help me out here to the, times 1.08 to the negative second power is $171.47. Okay, and then I've got 200 times 1.08 to the negative fifth power. That's $207.85. And notice how I don't, is that wrong? What did I? Oh, I put 0.5, I'm sorry, I did. 200 times 1.08 to the negative fifth. Yeah, I put 0.5 and 136.12. Jeez. And then one thing along the way, don't round until you're in your last step. If you round, your numbers can start getting worse and worse off. So try not to do that until you're at your last phase of this. And then the last one is $500 times 1.08 to the 300. I'm talking and chewing gum at the same time, and it's not working, to the negative eighth power. 162.08. Yeah, 162.08. Now I'm going to take $162.08, add to that $136.12, and add to that $171.47. And I get $469. And 67 cents. So, talk to me. Should I go with this investment or not? No. In technical terms, we say this investment sucks. Because I'm going to pay $500 to get the equivalent of $469.67. That's why we do this, because the reality is that our projects are going to stream money at us through a period in the future. But we're going to be putting money into them now. If we've made the decision, we're going to put the money in now. So we can now, we have this ability to compare the cost in current dollars to the value of the future expected cash flows in current dollars. In this case, this is what we would call a negative net present value project. If net present value was below zero, it doesn't matter how far below zero, it's over, gone. We say no. Even if it were $498, I'd say no, because it's just negative. And that's our decision criterion. Negative, no. Okay, so there you are with that. That's what essentially what present values are about. It gets a little bit stranger as time goes on because you see, a lot oftentimes we are dealing with what are called annuities. Now, technically, I guess you could call this an annuity in the sense that an annuity is a stream of cash flow going through time. And this is a stream, but it's awfully lumpy and it's not very regular. We kind of get this excited about the idea of the present value of regular annuities and the future value of regular annuities. So in other words, I might be interested in the how much I could would have if I were to put money into a bank account every year for the next 30 years. How much money would I have in that account at the end of that time? That would be a regular annuity. A regular annuity has a constant stream to it, a consistency. And for a basic of retirement planning or estate planning, it would be great if there were a nice, simple formula that we could refer to. And the answer is, yeah, there is. For both future values and present values, we can actually find out what the value of something as a stream of cash flow is at some point in the future and in the present. There's a formula to do it, but your calculator, provided you have a TI-83 plus or TI-84, or even a BA-2, which I don't address in this class, if you have one of these, it becomes extraordinarily simple. But let me write down the formula for an annuity. Now, when I use the term ordinary, that means in it's either future or present value. If I say ordinary, that means that each payment comes at the end of the period. Ordinary means that each payment comes at the end of the period. An annuity due would be one where each payment comes at the beginning of the period. We will, for the most part, do ordinary annuities. But know that annuity due is out there. So, we're going to start on January 1. At the end of each year for the next 30 years, you put $2,500 into a savings account that pays 5.8%. How much will be there right after you put in your last payment? Now, this is an ordinary one. It's ordinary because I'm putting in each payment at the end. So when I look at the snapshot, I've just put in my last payment. Now, here's what I want you to do. You tell me, would you rather see the formula to do it, or would you rather have your calculator do what would otherwise take about 5-10 minutes to do? Formula, calculator. Okay. Doesn't matter. I actually will allow you to call your mom and ask her if you want to do it that way. Okay? I'm serious. Your mom will say, "What the hell are you calling me with this for? Are you drunk?" Yes, Mom. Okay. Okay. I'll show you the formula on Monday. Open, turn on your calculator. Watch this. Watch how fast it happens. There's the formula for it. Let's honk it on the calculator. Turn the calculator on and hit apps, APPS, finance. You'll see apps and then choose one, which is finance. And then the very top selection is TVM solver. Do you see it? Good. Open that one. Now, here's what I want you to do. You might have been told somewhere a little bit differently. That's because other people lie to you. Okay, see the N? What do you suppose N is here? Yeah. See, you key in 30. Now, if it were there were some weird-ass compounding, you just key in, like, semi-annual 30 times 2. You can actually do math in there. Don't try to do the math in your head or anything like that. Just if it were like every 6 months you put in the payments 30 times. Don't worry about it. It's a straight up one now. The next one is I percent, right? So you key in here 5.8%. Just key in 5.8. Don't put in 0.058 or I'll give you a wedgie. Not without dinner and dancing first. Okay. Now, what the hell is the next thing on there? I've done this so many times, you'd think I'd remember what the sequence is. Okay. Okay, so it's 30, and then you put in 5.8, and now it says the present value. Well, I don't know the present value of it. Actually, the present value is like, I'm not going to even worry about that. Put in a present value of 0, okay? And, oh, put in negative. PVs on calculators are negative. Don't ask me why. Just put in a negative. Now, what are the payments? $2,500 each. Just zero. But if it's a number, put in a negative whenever you see a PV. Okay, now, you see that P over Y and C over Y? If they're not one, make them one. Because if they're not one, God doesn't love you. Now, go down to the end. You see PMT, end or begin? Which is this, end or begin? End. This is an ordinary annuity. Watch that. It is so easy to have that key on the wrong one, and then you get some weird-ass answer. Now go up, and let's find out. Go back up to FV and hit second answer. I can't even see my own calculator here. My eyes are so blind. Green key, alpha solve. Solve. Down there with the enter, alpha enter. So the answer you get should be, and ignore that negative, 190, 824, 46. The alpha, enter.
I can't even see.
Because technically there was no negative on the PV, so it's a weird. Yeah. Now, here's where this comes into use, and you get the same thing the other way. Suppose that we wanted to know the present value of a future expected cash flow, the present value of a future expected annuity. Regular amounts are going to go over a period of time. What is that worth now? So I could say, okay, well, you know, you just won the lottery. Okay, you just won the lottery. Now you are going to get $1,000 a year for 20 years, and we're going to discount the cash flows at 4.5%. You get these at the end of every year, these $1,000. What would be the equivalent amount you would want right now that would make you indifferent between getting this annuity and getting a lump sum right now? So we are going to turn the problem around. You go up to the top. What's N in this case? 20. Drop down. What's my I percent? 4.5. Now, I don't know the present value, but I'm going to want to know that. So I'm going to look at my payments, which are, in this case, PMT is going to be 1,000. There's going to be no kicker at the end. So you zero out FV. Now, if there were a kicker at the end, you'd put in that amount. And I'm going to put in a zero. And I'm going to make sure that 1 and 1 are there, and it's still an N because we're talking about at the end of the year. Now, I want you to go back up to the PV and hit alpha solve. And you should get, again, ignore the negative, $13,007.94. That would be the same as getting 20 years of $1,000. You say, well, that's less. Well, yeah, because I can take the $13,000 now and invest it. Now here's the final part of it, where the real practical, the everyday thing happens with this. I've got to find who this applies to. Yeah, actually, it does apply to you. You've graduated from this fine university. You got a job as the assistant manager of the Jiffy Lube on the south side of Memphis. You met a woman named Mabel. She's got three kids, and she said, let's move in together and get married. And you said, okay. And so you decide that you're going to go down to the Ace Trailer Park, and you find yourself a real sweetheart of a deal on a double-wide trailer that fits with the double-wide woman, and you are in business. You go to your loan officer. That's me. My name is Al. Don't you ever call me Al outside of this class. I will flunk your ass. Al. And I say, what can I do for you? I want to buy a trailer. You want to buy a trailer? That's your wife? Yeah. You want a double Y, right? Right. Well, how much are they asking for it? Well, I don't have any money. Don't worry, no down payment. How much are they asking for it? Well, you know, it's pretty expensive. It's like $40,000. $40,000? Well, I think we can do you a deal here. We got a rate on loan, 30-year fixed rate loan. We can get you a rate on that of 6.99% today only. So the APR on this loan is going to be 6.99%. It's a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, FRM, and we're going to do you 6.99%, and we're going to do this just for you. This is the first day of the month, so your first payment will be due at the end of the month, on the last day of the month. So let's get this thing done. Pull out your calculator now, and I want you to tell me. Your payments are monthly. So what is N going to be on this loan? 30 times 12. And you can either do it in your head or you can just have the calculator do it for you. 30 times 12 is. And now you're going to go down to your I percent. What's the I percent? What is it? 6.99 divided by 12, because that APR will be busted down 12 times. So key in 6.99 divided by 12. Don't do it in your head. Just put it right in there. Because every month, interest will be recalculated on the balance. Now, the present value. What's the present value? What's PV on this? $40,000. So you're going to put in a negative. Always put in a negative there for God's sake. PVs. I'm going to put in a negative $40,000. Leave the payment alone. Now there's not going to be a kicker payment at the end, so FV is zero. And make sure you're on the end, because this is, loans are ordinary annuities. Now go back up and get me the payment. Put the cursor on payment and hit alpha solve. Is that what it is? 85 cents. 265.85. Now, how much did you say you make a month there at that job at the Jiffy Lube? Well, you're pulling in a monthly paycheck of $1,200. Yeah. See, what they would do next, they say, all right, we've got a trigger at payment can't be more than, let's say, 25% of your monthly income. Yeah, you qualify. You are going to live the dream, my friend. Here are the keys to that house. You and that woman of yours, you have a good life. Cut to music, fade to black, end of story. In other words, you can calculate your payments on loans now. On the exam, I'll ask you to find a car payment. And you can figure out, you can look at cars and you can just see how much can I afford if they trigger at some percentage or whatever. You'll see what your payments are. That's all I have for you. I thank you.